Welcome to the Susan Winter Show. Here you'll find practical tips and tools to address your most pressing concerns on love, dating, and partnership. And now, here's your love and life mentor, Susan Winter.
Hello, everybody. Susan Winter here. Welcome back. I am continuing my interviews with fabulous, dynamic people that I like. I want to introduce you to. And today I have Teresha Young with me, who is an award-winning, accredited, and certified international wellness and relationship coach based in the UK, which you'll be able to tell from her beautiful dialect, with a global client base. And she's been in the industry over 20 years, specializing in helping individuals to build better relationships with themselves and to lead radical transformations in their well-being, effectiveness, and relationships with others. She has a podcast, which is brilliant. I've been on it twice, I have to say. Relationship Talk, the podcast, and it covers love, well-being, dating, relationships, and things like that, hosting industry experts such as moi. So we are talking today about personal empowerment. I know, big word. What is it? What does it look like? What does it feel like? Can you cultivate it? Do you know if you have it? I'm so excited to introduce my colleague and buddy, Teresha. Teresha, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's such an honor and privilege to have this opportunity to join you. As you said, you've been a guest on my show two times. So it's very strange to be on the flip side of it now and being interviewed by you. So thank you again for the opportunity.
You're welcome, hon. So let's talk about empowerment. What does that, in your world, what does that look like to you in manifestation, a person walking around? How do we know?
Yeah. So how do you know when you are living your personal empowerment? Or as I say, you're in your personal power. And it's a phrase that we often hear. And sometimes I think there's a big misunderstanding about what it is because it's got the word power in it. And often when we think about the word power, we think about somebody who is influencing somebody or exploiting somebody with manipulative, controlling, coercive, and sometimes even abusive behavior. So that's why we link it that way. But personal power, personal empowerment is not that. And the great news is that we all have it. It's in us right now and we can access it because it is within us.
Okay, go on. You got
what
it.
How do you do it? What is it? So basically, personal power is our ability to be able to act on things, to be able to do things while we're then not. Because when we don't do things, then we become powerless people. So it is really an opportunity for us to connect with our mind, to connect with our body, to connect with our spirit, and to really witness our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions. There's actually an acronym, Susan, that I use, which is TEAR. T-E-A-R. Okay. It sounds quite, but it's not. It's really empowering, actually. So T is your thoughts impact on your emotions, the E.
Okay.
And then that results in the actions that we take. And then the R is results. So we've got thoughts, emotions, actions, and results. So when we start to tap into our thinking, our self-talk, and to think about, is there a better way of thinking about this? How can I think differently in that situation? Then we connect with our emotions. And we know that a lot of the actions we take are led by our emotions. So we really need to get better at labeling our emotions correctly, because we tend to say happy, sad, angry. Those are the three core emotions that we tend to say.
Right.
Actually, when we peel the onion, it goes deeper. You might not actually be sad. You could be lonely. You could actually be frustrated and disappointed. And when we start to peel the layers of that emotion, you realize that, okay, natural fact, there could be a pattern. Maybe I'm feeling lonelier more often than I believe. I thought it was sadness, but it's not sadness. It's actually anger, or it's actually frustration or disappointment or guilt, shame, blame. There's a lovely tool that people can use. It's called a wheel of emotions. You can go online, you can Google it, and that will help you to re-identify your emotional state. So how do we cultivate it? And, you know, what does that look like in the real world?
Right.
So personal power, personal empowerment is about having that inner strength, that mental strength. The word resilience, I think that loads of people will term it as. So when we have that, we have this element of confidence that would exude through us, that can actually carry us through the most challenging times. Now, we're living in a world that feels so challenging. We look at our political climate. We look at our economic climate. We look at our social family life. There's so many challenges out there. But when we are able to see those obstacles as opportunities, as I say, turn that O, obstacles, into opportunities, then we are able to see how we can actually bounce back from the setback as well.
You have already covered, this is like War and Peace of self-empowerment. You've already had, I'm going to stop you because you've got, let's make it really simple. You've got so much information here.
Yeah.
Okay. Explain to me how you would recognize a person who is truly self-empowered. Because like you said, you started in the beginning by saying, you know, sometimes we imagine it's somebody cocky, somebody boastful. Could it be that gal on Instagram that I got this, I've got that. Oh, look at me. I've got, what is it really?
So what is it really? Yeah. So as I said, it's something that we cultivate within us. So when you can identify that you have more high vibes rather than low vibes, for example, that you generally feel more hopeful, that you feel courageous, that you feel understanding, that you actually feel very loving towards yourself, that you are able to maybe forgive yourself for quote-unquote mistakes and also others. Now, when we hear that word forgiveness, we often think that we are condoning the actions of somebody, but that's not. Forgiveness is simply releasing yourself from those heavy thoughts, feelings, emotions, whatever is showing up for you.
Yeah.
So that's one of the signs that you are actually, you know, in your personal empowerment, is that you are sensing more of a high vibe rather than low vibrating of
feelings. We still imagine it would be sort of like the devil wears Prada, you know, that kind of really tough, because I know you deal primarily with women. Is that correct?
Right.
Practice? Right. So this is for all, you know, I do all everything in mind. So we oftentimes imagine this person that exudes all that as being empowered, and it's not that. That's false. That's the posturing as if, correct? You're talking about the high vibe. There's a beautiful thing, and one of your Brits, and I don't remember who it was, you know, I wrote it down on a piece of paper in college. Now, do you know that? You think I have that piece of paper? But I've always thought this was the most beautiful statement, to paraphrase it. I don't know if it was Disraeli, who it would have been, that the real sign of class and breeding is the ability to make others feel comfortable in our presence. Yeah. Not as a sycophant, but having a high vibe, meaning I like myself, so I'm not needing to tear you down, right? Mm. So you sense this, are you able to sense this in people doing the work that you do? Who's got the real empowerment and who's bluster? Are you able to?
Yes, I am able to sense that. And it's all about the motivation. You have to tap into the motivation behind it. What is the intention behind the action? So if, for example, the intention is to show off, to be boastful, that's not a high vibe energy, because that's what aesthetics. However, if the motion or the motivation is all about actually that kindness, how can I help others? No, how can I support myself? How can I support other people? It's a different kind of energy that you're exuding.
Beautiful energy. Beautiful. It's lovely that your version, and I'm going to say it's your version, I do agree with you, but it's kind of high-minded to say that your version of empowerment looks generous, loving, and magnanimous. I think there are a lot of people who are going to be watching this going, I didn't put those in the same package. So we're imagining a much harder exterior sometimes for power, right? Maybe that's a very male model that we've been going off of. I'm not sure that power looks like this because we see men doing it. But this generous take is quite beautiful to add to this interpretation of it. And I do agree with you. You have far more power when you don't need to exert it over others. You have far more power when you don't need them to feel like less for you to feel like more, right?
Absolutely. And because I predominantly work with women in my coaching practice, there's a concept called masculine and feminine energy.
Yeah.
And a lot of women who are in know, high ranking jobs, for example, even single mummies, whatever that may be, we have almost had to fight for our positions. Yes.
Absolutely.
So that puts us in more of a masculine energy. I'm not saying that you are more male or more man. Mm-hmm. It's the energy. It puts us into the doing energy, the action, the vision, all that, the controlling energy. Whereas personal power as well can tap us into our feminine energy, which allows us to receive. So that means that we are receptive, that we are coming from a place of calm, balance, creativity, flow, when we take our hands off the control. And that can feel really uncomfortable for us to actually say,
to control by letting go of control.
surrendering exactly to the process, which means when we are in our personal power that we have to have an element of trust. Trust in ourselves, trust in the process. So a lot of that, when you feel that you're not trusting the process or not even trusting yourself, that's another sign that you are not necessarily in your personal empowerment.
Okay. All right. So now we know what it looks like in the real world.
Yeah.
And to go back, is TIER your methodology to cultivate it?
So it's an acronym. I'm not going to take ownership of it. I think some people have heard of it. Cultivate it. So when we can sit down and just say, what are my thoughts and how is that impacting on my emotions?
Exactly,
it is, isn't it? Our thoughts and our belief systems, because a lot of our belief systems are actually limiting beliefs, which are there for so many reasons. When you think about the societal pressures, when we think about our childhood programming, mm-hmm. when we think about our adult programming, when we think about governmental pressures, parental pressures, family pressures, there's so many reasons why we have self-imposed limits on us and also limits from other people. So we can have these limiting beliefs that affect our thoughts. So again, it's a case of witnessing what is showing up for us on a daily basis, which is why methods like journaling is so good.
So self-analysis, you have to be able to be self-reflective to catch the thoughts that you would like to transform, correct?
That is correct, exactly. And when we get that, we can even say to ourselves, you know, and there's a technique where people might say, cancel, cancel, cancel. I don't necessarily want to cancel out the thought because I think everything needs to be honored. Okay. So you sit back and you honor, you witness the thought. Okay, it might be something that's not so healthy. It might actually be causing us more harm, but there's no need to cancel it. Let's explore it. Let's go further. Where is it?
Why? Would this give you the why? It's there?
Exactly. Why is it there? Now, a lot of it is actually derived from our childhood programming. A lot of it is from our childhood experiences, our attachment styles that we form at such an early age. And when we get to witness that, we can go deeper into it. It's like going to the wound rather than just putting a plaster on the wound.
Right, right, exactly. And then you can actively transform it through positive self-talk.
Positive self-talk, such as like affirmations.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think that affirmations have to be within the realm of reality so that our mind will believe it. You know, for me to say, I have $50 million and I look like I'm 25, I think my mind's going to go, Susan, okay, not really. But I think if I actually only have 49, but let's say that I had 50 million. Let's say. So I think sometimes people need to think incrementally or to the best possible outcome that they can actually, because I think you have to buy your argument for an affirmation to work. Are you of that same kind of mindset?
Absolutely. We're going to have so many reasons. Our inner critic is going to show up just like what you said, Susan, and say, hey, what are you talking about? Stop kidding yourself.
Yeah.
So why? For me, it's evidence-based. For limiting beliefs, we're going to have shelves of evidence as to why we can't do anything because of our negativity bias.
Right.
We have negativity bias where we look for the things that aren't going right. So
right.
Therefore, be so intentional about if you're going to say an affirmation to make it something that feels true to us in a positive state too. I love I am affirmations such as I am courageous. So you're going to have to look back at all of the times in your life when you were courageous, so that you can.
Oh, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. So this removes it from a hope, from a dream, from a possibility, and pulls it down into real life. So this is what I call history.
Yes.
It's not a hope. It is your history. You've already lived it. So that's your security. Let me just reiterate this again for anybody watching, because this is so brilliant. Affirmations are very powerful in the present tense, as we've just discussed, but to have them grounded in reality that has a historic nature that you can actually grab onto as I've already accomplished it, right? Beautiful. I don't think I've heard anybody say it like that, Tricia. I haven't listened to the entire glut of all world information, but I don't think I've ever heard it that concretely stated. So
that's important. We are fact finders. So when we go back, the brain is looking for the facts. So there's another word actually called affirmations with an O rather than an I. Now, an affirmation, and it was actually brought to my attention by a lady called Mary Beth Schroeder, and she's of day one coaching. An affirmation is when you ask yourself, how am I courageous? So rather than saying I am, if that doesn't feel true to you, how am I courageous? So then what that does, the brain starts to go back, again, evidence-based. Oh, this is how it is because of all of the reasons here. This is how you are courageous. Or where have I been courageous? Where have I been strong, resilient? So an affirmation is more about asking yourself a question around it and allowing the brain to give you the answers.
Oh, this is very helpful. I can't imagine you as a love coach and a wellness coach and like and an affirmation coach. You're like the whole bloody package all in one. They get all these individual disciplines in one coaching session. Oh my God, this is brilliant. Okay, so that is a very concrete and reasonable, actionable way to begin to shift and get into our inner strength and our true demonstration of strength. Okay, so now that we have it and we know the signs of it, what happens when somebody tests us or we come up with a triggering situation and we find a real challenge where we begin to lose our personal power? What are your steps to go back in and reassert how we maintain power? Like, because say, for example, we're in love. We know who we are and we're great and we're all like it. But suddenly now we merge with somebody and the us gets washed away in the process of loving. How do we stay intact?
The thing is, if we have been in a situation where somebody might have triggered us or activated us in some sort of way, it's probably because a boundary has been crossed in some way, shape, or form. Now, if a boundary has been crossed in some way, shape, or form, it's basically asking ourselves, did we set a boundary with that person
in to begin with?
did we actually set it?
Yeah, right. Did they trip it on purpose or did they trip it by accident? Okay.
Oh, well, exactly. Beautiful. And there's some people who intentionally will try to wind us up in our life because they know. And it's probably because we have reacted rather than responded before in an unhelpful way. So, and some people get, you know, they get ammunition from that. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, you know.
Right.
So in actual fact, you know, have we actually set a boundary with that person? Did we assert it with that person and have we maintained it? Because one thing to set and assert about a boundary, but if you don't maintain it, and also I think for many people, they need to know the consequence of not actually honor a boundary. And sometimes we don't even say it. We say what we want, but they don't know what the outcome is if they don't deliver. Or they don't respect.
Well, it takes courage to act on the consequence because it might be you closing the door because you've had this conversation 20 times and they've just like, whatever. I'm just not that way. Yeah, you're too sensitive, whatever. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly. So firstly, there are the boundaries that we set with other people. And then there's our own personal boundaries as well. Because if we don't honor our own boundaries first, how can we even expect somebody to respect and honor us?
Okay. Unwind that a little bit. Our own personal boundaries. What does that look like? What are we talking about?
So how we take care of ourselves, first off. Because the first primary relationship, because you've spoken about love relationships and so forth, but the primary relationship we have is with ourselves as well. And of course, whether you have a higher power, your source energy, God, you know, whatever that may be for you, our primary relationship is with ourselves. So if we are not actually honoring our own boundaries when it comes to our functional boundaries, which are the way that we perform, the way that we do stuff, if we're not honoring our own boundaries there, we're working overtime galore, we're not taking time for ourselves, and we're just, you know, putting other things before us, then that's not great. Same with our relational boundaries as well. You know, how are we actually taking care of ourselves? So firstly, we need to set boundaries for ourselves. And then make the brain know that we are respecting and honoring those boundaries. That gives us the confidence. That gives us personal power. Then we are able to assert ourselves with somebody else and say, I know myself pretty darn well. And this is what I need. Because Susan, some people think if I express my need, it comes as neediness. And there's a difference between neediness, that clinginess, kind of like, see me, see me, see me, kind of, I don't feel a certain way unless this happens, and I need you to do that for me.
Yeah, it's the knowingness. It's that intangible thing when you're giving that information that is very solidified and unified. It's not like a desperate attempt to give me love or give me something I don't have yet. It's very, I could have stopped you at the second sentence and just done an hour on that. You've got so much information here that is so brilliant. You're skipping over it because I know it's kind of like I've come into this candy shop with all these different things. And I'm like, oh my God, I want a taste of that. I want a taste of this. This is so, so beautiful and so brilliant. Okay. As women,
yes,
we have been, I don't know, historically, biologically, I don't know, kind of predisposed to taking care of others first. Yeah. Yes. And it is, I think of the gals that I like the most and that really are the most loving and generous with me. And they are constantly sacrificing themselves for other people. I pride myself on the fact that at this juncture in my life, finally, I have loving, devoted, generous friends that are as much of a giver as I am. But I notice this and I'm always yelling at them and they're always yelling at me to take care of myself. And it's an ongoing journey, you know? And I know you have a child. We've got children, we've got family, we've got husbands, we've got duties, we've got responsibilities. It can be a daunting task for us to really prioritize ourselves, you know? And how do you kind of keep yourself on point? Do you have a little way to do that? Check in with yourself?
I do. I'm always checking in with myself. As you said, you know, I am a mummy to a daughter, a fabulous daughter who turns 8 this month, actually. And it's really important that I do check in for myself and take time for me. So some of the things that I do is I'm very much into mindfulness. So like I mentioned, or journaling so that I can witness my thoughts, my feelings and my emotions and to take the intangible and to make it tangible because there's so much going on in my mind. Now, I'm a business owner. I am looking after my daughter as well and I am taking care of myself. I've got my wonderful family. I've got wonderful relationships to nurture too. I do need that me time. Yeah. I do need that moment just to sit back. So there's various different things that I would do in order to take care of myself and maybe for the listeners that it will help. Like gratitude practice. So for me, every single night before I go to bed, I think about 10 things I'm grateful for that day. If I can narrow it down to that day rather than generalizing, it makes it so specific because it helps me to evaluate the day. Mm-hmm. And not only do I state what I'm grateful for, I say why and how it makes me feel. Because when you say that, it just generates this feeling of appreciation. I don't know how to explain it.
Teresa, I mean, I would be exhausted living one of your days mentally. I don't know how you do it. You're so good. Oh, I'm the laziest person. I'm not lazy. I'm just, you know what? I'm not sure about my level of mindfulness. I got an ongoing to-do list in my mind that runs like a stock ticker, like that. But this is, I do know that in times of real personal challenge. Mm. Those are the times I tend to dig into my spirituality and myself because like it's rock bottom. The art of keeping that practice alive when things are going well or things are going, whatever. So it sounds like you have a daily discipline where you have carved out a routine that keeps you strong, correct? You've got your nighttime gratitude. Yeah.
Gratitude. And the reason why is that it's so important that we have the ability to manage our nervous system. And something like a routine is so helpful. I've had super challenging times in my life. Susan, I haven't actually spoke about in this, and I've had my own well-being challenges, my own mental health challenges as well. And through those times, I needed a sense of familiarity and normality. So in order to cultivate a routine was so important for me. And it's a routine that I have continued because it helps me to feel safe. Now, a part of what I do in the work that I do is helping people to feel secured, aligned, empowered, and fulfilled. So secure, aligned, fulfilled, and empowered. It's my SAFE acronym. So I use that. What I teach, I live. So I need to have this
that routine. I know.
Yeah, thank you. I need to have this routine. And also, my daughter was born with a genetic condition, which means that she's got various different disabilities as well. So for me and for her, having a routine has been so helpful. So I will set up my day. And I know what you're saying there, Susan, about there's so much going on. You've got so much on your to-do list. Habit stacking is so good. So for me to do my personal development, and it said about 10 to 15 minutes a day of personal development is good for our empowerment, I will listen to that whilst brushing my teeth. And I would listen to your podcast. I would listen to your YouTube videos. Yeah, I would. I was getting ready in the morning. And I do that. So I'm habit stacking. This is how I'm able to fit things into my day. And I know what exactly what I need to do. I have my home treadmill. So I get my home treadmill so I'm looking after my body as well. And of course, there has to be flexibility. Like this week, my daughter has been unwell. So she's been off school from Tuesday to tomorrow, which will be Friday. So I've had to have some flexibility in that, but still I have found ways to be able to have that familiarity so that I feel safe and I don't go into the fight, flight, freeze response that many of us.
Right. This is so beautiful. I met you through your association to Saskia Nelson, whom I adore. Yes. And just a plug for this, if you, any of you out there are thinking of getting dating photos, I mean, there's no place else to look. Go to Hey Saturday. She's brilliant. Right now she's got New York, LA, London, and maybe some other places, but I absolutely love her. She came to New York with Giles years ago. I just had a hip replacement and she was kind enough. I was on like these walker things. And she came to my lounge at the terrace and sat and interviewed me. And she was so just delightful. I mean, so they had a ton of things to do. And then another time she came and I took her out to Cora Club. And so she's just been a very special person to me. And it's thanks to you knowing her and working with her. But I'm always amazed. And I'm just going to say this as a because I want to say this about you. You know, I meet a lot of people in this business and they're not in it for the right reason. It's money. That's it. They might fix you. They might not. And then I meet people like you that are not only in it for the right reason, but you live it. It's, we all know the things to say, but living it is a whole nother story. So just from me to you, just, you know, big, big, big hug here.
Thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome. Now, let's get on to effective communication, okay? Mm-hmm. Because I know you could talk about a million things. Now, so we're taking care of ourselves.
Yes.
And we're working with our limited thinking and we're a work in progress at all times. And we need to have a discussion with somebody about a boundary or about something that happened. And some people, even though they've done all the work, have a bit of intrepidation. What do I say? How do I say it? Do I have a right to say it? Yes, of course you do. You must. How do you approach difficult conversations when you need to talk about boundaries or a need that you have?
Yeah. Firstly, it's understanding what it is that we want to actually assert. So what has been the trigger? What has been happening all the way up until this point to have this conversation? Now, a lot of when we do that work and reflection, sometimes we can find that actually the responsibility sits with us rather than the other person. Sometimes that happens. But if it isn't the case, then it's about having that honest, open and transparent conversation. Hot. Honest, open.
Okay.
Have a hot conversation with this person. Now, I think we can plan our words, exactly. And I would always invite people to actually plan out what it is that you want to say to the person.
Absolutely.
And even if you have to take whatever you have written with you so that you've got some structure and you can just make sure that you don't go off piece, because our emotions probably are going to kick in, I'm going to get wild up. It's like, plan it out. There's also some other considerations for effective communication. The timing of that conversation. It's like, if that person has come home or whatever it is, and it doesn't look like the right time, although we might really want to have that conversation, you're not going to get the best energy from that person or the best response. Yep. So think about the timing to have effective communication. Also think about the energy. Obviously, how do you feel? You know, are you bringing your best energy to that conversation too? And also the energy of the person. And the other thing, the environment. Sometimes it can be helpful to take the conversation out of a familiar place. Now, I would like to think that our home is is our safe space for many people. And it might be helpful actually to go on a walk with that person or to take it to another venue, another setting, so that you can have that confirmation, switch up the flow, because you can have a tough conversation and then you're still sitting in the same place afterwards. So it's like trying to do something different.
Interesting choice. I had a client who, the time her partner would talk to her is when they went on a walk. Not in the house. That's the time that they would talk. And so that was the time that we arranged for her to have her conversation. Interesting to break it up. Let me just say for the ladies out there, times to not talk. Mm-hmm. You're coming near your lady time and you know you're going to be a little nutty. Don't start the conversation then, because it'll be 4 a.m. You will have been talking for 6 hours. Your partner will be holding their head in their hands and you won't remember why you said it to begin with. And number two, I'm one for clarity and brevity. I tend to notice that if you're involved, like let's say you're heterosexual. Well, let's say it doesn't matter. Anytime a person starts a conversation, they begin rambling and describing the outfits and describing the day and going off target, you lose the person listening. You have to be extremely, as you said, focused on the message and the intention and the clarity and as concise as possible while still having it be warm and not accusatory. I think that people will enter negotiation with us when we can make it here's what is happening that I'd like us to figure out together. So I think there's a big part in my practice of teaching people to approach their mate as an ally, not an adversary, and to take the heat off of them. So I know you have your own methodology. I'd like to hear what you have.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I mean, I'm in so alignment with what you're saying there as well. And when you spoke about the accusations, this is when we can use words like I statements. So rather than you finger pointing, accusing, I have noticed, I have felt. Yes. So then it brings it back to you. So it doesn't feel like you are attacking that person. So just being very mindful about our choice of words is so important. And then, as you said, it's the observation. I'm not sure whether people listening may be familiar with a technique called the nonviolent communication technique.
Go ahead and explain it.
Thank you. So what it is that you note the observation, and the observation is just a fact, taking your emotions out of it, the observation. And then it is how that makes you feel.
Exactly.
And then you tap into the feeling, linking back to actually labeling the feeling, the emotion correctly. Then you state the need. So what is it that you need and why is it important for you? And then you put in the request, as you were saying.
It's funny. I didn't ever read about that, but that's the system that I do exactly.
Okay.
But I think it's kind of logical. You place it there in a neutral category. You state why it's important and how it's affecting you. And you state what you'd like to see instead. Correct? Because some people don't have a clue. Another thing is that for the ladies out there, guys are not telepathic, ladies. They don't. There's this misconception that if they love me, they'll know. No, they don't know. Every woman's a damn combination lock. She's not exactly the same. What the last girlfriend needed to feel loved is not what you feel needed to be loved. And if you don't tell them, they can't. So many times I find that guys, they just want to know, what do you want? What do you need? And You know, we can't be afraid. One, we have to know, and two, we can't be afraid to tell them, right?
Absolutely. And this is why when it comes to relationships as well, see if you can schedule in regular times to just communicate, to do an analysis of the relationship, to see what's working well and what may not be working so well. So it doesn't feel like you're just landing things yes. on a person. So if you schedule regular communication, you know, audits, you know, well-being check-ins on the state of the relationship, then hopefully that will help to mitigate some of these, you know, difficult experiences that we're having with people.
I have a lady that, brilliant, she teaches people how to do TEDx talks. She's a wonderful speaker, Tricia Brook. And she has, I think I can say this. I mean, I don't think I'm defying any confidence because it's really quite brilliant. She sits down with her husband once a week and has a talk. What's going on? And you know, I just think it's incredible. Because she is such a dynamic force. And so they have this conversation. And I remember she said in the beginning, he was a little bit like, ooh, you know, because they think, oh, am I in trouble? What am I going to hear? Is she going to be unhappy? And she said, now he's so eager and looks forward to it because they have their needs as well. And oftentimes, you know, when we don't express our needs, that is fertile ground for resentment. And yet our partner's got no idea why.
Or what happened?
Right? Or you don't know why they're getting grumpy, but they don't want to tell you because either they don't know how to say it or they're afraid if they're going to upset you. And yeah, very
so true. Yeah. And we start to camouflage things. So we actually start arguing about the toothpaste being squeezed from the middle
exactly.
and not from the bottom.
That's how the, then- that's how the resentment starts. It's never about the, it's never about the toothpaste. I said this before, but I'm old enough to have grown up with black and white television, which was a big deal to have TV. And I was watching Walter Cronkite in the what we now call Legacy News. And he had on television in the evening news segment a man whose wife divorced him for leaving the cap off the toothpaste. This was a real story. I remember as a kid because I just thought this was so amazing. And as a child, even, I'm thinking that wasn't the reason, but the man was dumbfounded because he's like, but, you know, I can just imagine she told him 50 things that she needed before that. He never listened. And that cap on the toothpaste was the last one for her, because this is the thing that kills men. Suddenly they have this nice girl. She's all sweet. And then suddenly something so silly. I got into a towel fight with a guy. The argument was about a towel. Okay, you're going to love this one. Because I got to make it real to the real world. So I had moved out of my home, and my partner was still in the local community where I lived, which was kind of rural. And I'd go back to visit him. And I, you know, listen, I gave him my treadmill. I gave him beds. I gave him furniture. I gave him all of my towels, you know, to, all this stuff. Because I had this house that I had to go from 3,000 square feet to an apartment in New York. All I asked when I come on the weekend is that I have a clean towel. That's, and I kept asking this week after week. It wasn't about the towels, but he was convinced that it was, because I came back one weekend and I flipped out. And he called his father and he said, she went crazy. And the father said to him, what about? And he said, a towel. A towel. And the father said, well, you know, women are crazy. What the point? It wasn't about the towel, for God's sake. And I kept telling him, we are together. We've been together 2 years. Mm-hmm. I have pictures of you on my nightstand, a trip that we've taken to London, a trip that we've taken to Florence. I'm a fantasy action figure. You are an artist that draws my bodies. And you have girls from the Renaissance Fair on your walls and pictures of exes. You don't have one photo of me in your life, yes. which only echoes the fact that I don't feel like you've ever fully let me in. Mm. This blew his mind. He couldn't hear this. He still thought it was about the towel, because it just, she went crazy on the towel. It was never about the towel.
And that's the thing, is the ability for somebody to be able to truly listen and actually hear you. There's one thing to listen, but did they actually hear what you said? That, and he wasn't hearing. And I can understand how that was a complete camouflage for him. He didn't want to hear anything else, because that means that he has to take responsibility. So he didn't want to take responsibility for that. So you take the responsibility for that. So he just put his hands up and say, it's not me, it's you.
Interestingly enough, when I broke up with him, he was shocked. And he had then finally decided that he'd stop testing me. He made it very hard for me. He was going to be like, give me a hard time. You know, I think to maintain control, he was really enjoying it. So, you know, when I finally backed away, he was really shocked because at that point he was, I'm done, I'm in. But I found it so offensive to do this on purpose because you can't not notice this. Well, who knows? Maybe there's a photo of me now that I'm gone. I don't know. Maybe it's there to program the next girl to feel insecure. I don't know. This was a long time ago before I started doing the work. But it was enough for me to understand that it's people think it's about whatever that thing was, you know, that they ran out of gas. And it's not that they ran out of gas. It's that they didn't care enough to plan the date because they didn't care enough about her, because they didn't care about her being safe or that she's, you know, it's always the things they didn't listen to. But again, to your point, we are required to tell them. We have to tell them what it is, to at least one, give them a chance to correct it. And if they don't correct it, two, give ourselves the knowledge it's not going to get better. And maybe we better think of a plan to evacuate.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power, but what we do with that knowledge is powerful. So we can take that information. If we then decide not to act upon it, then that's, we have to take responsibility for that. But it is information.
I know.
And I was saying there, Susan, in terms of saying they should know, it's almost like, no, they know who I am. But then we are evolving people every single day. What actually you think they might have known about you, you might have changed. You might not want that need anymore or anything. Right. Again, it's a case of not having that expectation, communicate very clearly what it is to avoid misunderstandings and misinterpretations.
Okay, so let's go on to one of the last conversations about personal power, because I could keep you here forever.
I could stay here forever.
I don't want to go past your dinner time. But let's talk about at the end of all this work, or perhaps in the doing of it, I believe that we amass a certain amount of personal power in beginning to now trust ourselves, to trust ourselves to take care of ourselves, to trust ourselves to advocate on behalf of ourselves. What methodologies and what things have, or maybe let me back up. What was your evolution in learning to trust yourself?
Yeah. When I started to live life with intentionality, when I found my purpose. And when you find what you are truly passionate about, then you are living in purpose, on purpose, with purpose. And the work that I do right now in terms of helping people with their well-being, with their relationships, I am living a life of purpose, on purpose, because that's what I had to do first for me. I firstly had to take care of my well-being and my relationships in order to cultivate my external relationships. So the first thing that I would say to know that you can start to, you know, build that trust with yourself is to actually find a sense of purpose.
Right.
Now, we can feel that we are being purposeful because we're wearing so many hats, mom, sister, wife, partner, but it's what it's for you, not for what you're giving to other people. So that was one of the first things that helped me to identify that I could trust myself and to live with intentionality. Also focusing on my strengths and my achievements, because we can have that self-talk. We can have that inner critic that will come and beat us up. And for me, I had a lot of that just due to my childhood upbringing, experiences at school, relationships that didn't work out. I had a lot of self-talk, a lot of inner critics coming up. So for me to be able to focus on my strengths and my achievements, but I have to be mindful because I am a hyperachiever. I've done that. It's one of my biggest saboteurs is that I'm a hyperachiever. So goal after goal. So I do need to sit back and actually witness that and then just be present in my feminine energy and receive. So, you know, something that I do is I always look back on my daily wins as well. That helps me to trust myself to remember the history. As you said before, remembering the history, so important to build up that trust.
So that's what we would call celebrating your wins. Yeah,
it would absolutely.
I don't do that enough. You're so inspiring. I wonder if I'll do any of this, to be honest with you. But I mean, at least I get to listen to it this way. It's, you know, I think for somebody starting on this journey who's just been given like 10,000 beautiful tips here, to just pick one, that's small enough that you can do it consistently. It's like trying to go to the gym and do a 2-hour workout, sometimes just incrementally, little things, one step along the way, because you've really got a bevy of these things to share with us today that are quite incredible. I know for me, the beginning of me trusting myself was a little bit different. I learned that there was absolutely nobody on the outside that was telling me what I needed to do, that I tried everybody's methodology in every different way, and it worked a little bit in some cases, but not 100% across the board. But in my mind, I always saw something different, a completely different approach. But I didn't trust that I was right, because I thought, well, they all do it this way. There's something wrong with me. Then I call it the wild card, because I'd played every card in the deck. There was nothing left. I'd tried every modality, every spiritual thing, every philosophical thing. And I thought, let me just try me. I mean, I got no cards left. And that was the one. And then when you learn to trust yourself, you know, you have that inner guidance, like you said, because at the top of this show, you said that you always have it within us. So my way of finding it was a little bit different. It was a process of elimination, but it took a lot longer. I went through a lot, many more decades than you have. I'm just like listening.
I've done four decades.
Oh, honey, I'm past you. Okay. Thank God I'm not double that yet, but I mean, I'm pretty close. So, you know, I think to myself that sometimes trusting ourselves, there are people that get it right out of the gate and it's innate for them. And there are those of us who work at it. And you know what? Those of us who work at it tend to try and pass on that information to others, because it was such a big deal for us that we want to help other people get it too, right? Because once you get it, you're like, oh, I got to tell people about this.
That's exactly what it is. It was my lived experience, because I went through such a bad time, Susan, where I didn't want to be here anymore.
Oh, honey.
I really didn't. And I had to seek help for that, for where I was in that place. And they actually put me on to a course of CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Of course. Fabulous. The best.
Yes. So when I did that course and I started to realize the power of my thoughts and witness my inner critic, and then my outcomes and my relationships improved, the relationship with myself improved, I said, who does not know about this? And that's when I got onto my personal practice, my private practice for my coaching, and I started to deliver that. Yeah. I wanted to teach people. I wanted to be able to educate people. Yeah. And then I was like, yeah, how can I serve? And it did take for my lived experience in order for that to then influence my personal experience too, because I was not going to be in a place. I always say it was my breakdown that led me to my breakthrough.
This is so beautiful.
That's where I was.
So I feel personally that the quickest way to get your soul purpose is to look where that challenge was that nearly broke you, because within that challenge are the seeds of where you are going to be assisting others. I've never heard of a fascinating person talking that had zero challenges. I've never, you know, we see these people that were like on Oprah, these people that were like hiding in a basement and going through traumas and wars. And they're the ones out there taking their show on the road to be motivating for other people. So I think there's, I think that our challenges in another light can be viewed as a purposeful gift. It is hard, but finding your way through that is a blessing for other people to help them be released, right? I know that you've done this in your life.
Absolutely. And seeing that gift, you know, as I said, you know, turning the challenge or the obstacle into an opportunity.
Yes.
For us to be able to say, so how can I, you know, turn that into the gift, you know, an opportunity for myself, for other people, and to allow ourselves to take responsibility for that, and being just decisive, commit to our goals, commit to our dreams. And that has us in our personal empowerment, so that we can also just witness. For me, Susan, as well, it really took for me to take stock on the people, the quality of the people in my life as well. And
that's huge, right?
It's
spring cleaning.
Absolutely. And it's a journey, not a destination. And we need to, as we grow as people, we need to really look at, you know, the people in our lives. You know, who are the people who I categorize them into like four types of people. Like, who are the people who lift me up and, you know, brighten up my day? I can turn to, hey. Now, who are the people who thrust me forward? Like the go-getters, go Teresa, the ones who really, really motivate me. And then I have the people who are the weights, who actually, when I leave them, I feel really down. I feel really negative, you know, after being in their company. And then the drags who, unfortunately, I don't have these people, the ones who always have a constant sad story, and I don't take any responsibility.
I know.
And I do my spring clean like that. And luckily I'm in the part where I've got people who are my lifts and my thrusts, and I'm able to bounce on that, my support network. Again, personal empowerment is about your support network as well, you know, who you have in your world.
I love this because I never had a filter. Like I talk about filtering for a partner, but in my early life, I never had a filter for friends. People would come into my life and ask me to be their friend, and I would just accept them. And along with that, I had this accrued baggage because I was always a helper, a fixer, somebody with resources, either time, generosity, ability to help. And I felt that because I got their call, I needed to answer. I thought that that was the requirement of friendship. And then I realized, I started to look at the weight of it, and I could barely get through my day. I remember one day waking up at 7. I had some things to do. I wasn't off the phone till 10 o'clock at night. I wasn't doing this work yet. I was kind of in the work, but I hadn't found my way to consulting. And I had been on the phone all day helping people with their life. And I just thought to myself, you know, most of those people wouldn't spend an hour with me on the phone. They wouldn't either think they had to. And it wasn't that it was reciprocal. It's just that I realized I actually had a partner tell me, Susan, you can work with 10 people that are going to go nowhere and come back next week and ask you the same question, or you can work with thousands. Like, do what you do. Keep up your writing. Keep up, just start. And I started to close the door. And I had to find an excuse because I wanted to be nice. So first I'm writing a book. Then it's, you know, that my mother was sick. And then I always had to have these excuses to close the door. Because you can't say, what are you going to say to people? I'm sorry. You're the one that pulls me down. I can't. You know, you can't really say that. So I had to back out of these things. And I also had to learn to be discerning. Just because I hear the call for help doesn't mean I am the one who needs to answer, because they are the ones. And I remember the first time that I challenged myself to not respond to this girl, because I was in New York and she was in LA, and I inherited her in a group of people. And she'd always call me for help, and it was always about the boyfriend, and they never liked her enough. They never loved her. And it was always so negative. And she called and called and called. And I stayed up on the phone till 1 o'clock. And I had an early show to do for CBS at like 5 a.m. And I thought, I can't do this to myself. I can't think, right? So the next time she called, I didn't answer. And I remember the discomfort. Oh my God, the feeling of I'm letting her down. She counts on me. Who's she going to go to? I was suffering. And I didn't stop thinking about it. But a couple days later, I heard from her and she said, you know, I sorted it out. And I realized the greatest gift to give them is to not always be the one to save them. Because then she had to look at herself.
Yes, absolutely. You can give the person the fish, or you can give them the fishing rod.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it can be hard to wean yourself from that if you, you know, you're sensitive.
You know, and it can be difficult to break a habit, and we'll be outside of our comfort zone. So even if there's one thing that we can do in order to regulate our nervous system when we're feeling a bit wobbly, it's just the power of the breath. Sometimes we can just make it so simple. Get us out of our thoughts and just do some deep breaths. Regulate the nervous system. Breathe it out. And that is, it says that the breath is the glue that connects the mind and the body. So all we have to do is just breathe. And I don't think we are very intentional about our breath work, but it's so important, and it gives us clarity too. So even if you are feeling like in that moment where you're feeling extremely uncomfortable, just breathe it out. Just breathe it out. And it can really help to regulate the nervous system.
You have such incredible information. I'm going to include all of your links in the show notes. But I want to ask you, how do you work with individuals? Do you consult them? Do you do group things? Just before we end this show, just because I know, how can people get a hold of you? I will have it in the show notes, but you tell us verbally in case they're listening to it and they can take a note.
That's absolutely. So thank you. My name is Tarisha Young, and I am Tarisha Young across all social media platforms. I also have my website, which is www.tarishayoung.com. And I work with people on a one-to-one basis, either individually, couples. Also, I work with corporate companies, delivering workshops and training sessions too. So you can reach out to me on DM, or you can just contact me via my contact page on my website. Email. I know Susan's going to put it all in the show notes anyway. So there are various different ways that you can contact me and various different ways that I work with people. So for me, it's all about assessing your individual needs rather than saying I work with you over a course of several weeks or so forth. I need to understand more about your journey. And then we will understand more about what that looks like for you in terms of transformation.
You just, I thank you so much for all of this. You know, me getting the opportunity to ask you questions, it just like opened this whole library of information, because when you're asking me, I'm the one like, bah, 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 bah. So
I enjoy it.
I thank you so much for your time tonight. And you are so lovely. I just, this is a beautiful concept. We've talked about many things, setting boundaries, finding our inner strength, what true empowerment is, how to increase your positive self-talk, how to reach your goals, how to filter out to make sure that you have supportive, loving people, and how to be loving to yourself. Tarisha, thank you so much for your time tonight, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan, for having me. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening. It's been an honor and a privilege. Take great care of yourselves.
Will you come back sometime in the future?
I will do. I will do, if you're willing to have me talk.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to do as many films as I can here in Arizona, because I look so good. And I go to New York City, it looks like you put a mask on me. It's just, oh. So, yes, I love it. Thank you so much for your time, everybody. Tarisha Young. Thank you.
Thank you very much.